आत्मनक्षामहोदयः। शीशुक उवाच एवं रजस्त्रियो राजन् कृष्णलीलानुगायति प्रेमरे हस्तु तच्चितास् तन्मनक्षा महोदयः। Ladies? No? Shishuku Vacha. Shukadeva Goswami said, Evam, thus, Vrajastriyaha, the women of Vraja, Rajan, O King, Krishna Leela, about the pastimes of Krishna. Anugayatihi, continuously chanting. Remare, they enjoyed. Ahasu, during the days. Tachitaha, their hearts absorbed in him. Tatmanasaha, their minds absorbed in him. Maha, great. Udayaha, experiencing a festivity. Translation. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, thus during the daytime, the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and those ladies' minds and hearts, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. Please repeat after me. Shri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, thus during the daytime, the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna. And those ladies' minds and hearts absorbed in him were filled with great festivity. Purport. This verse definitely confirms that the so-called pain of the heartbroken gopis is actually great spiritual bliss. On the material platform, pain is pain, period. But on the spiritual platform, so-called pain is simply a different variety of spiritual ecstasy. In the Western countries, people take pleasure in mixing different flavors of ice cream to produce wonderful combinations of flavor. Similarly, on the spiritual platform, Sri Krishna and his devotees expertly mix the flavors of spiritual bliss, and thus every day was a treat for the gopis. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 35th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled the gopis sing of Krishna as he wanders in the forest. Shishuka uvacha evam rajastriyo rajan Krishna lila nugayati remire ha su chatschitas tanmanaksha mahodayaha. Shishukadev Goswami said, O king, thus during the daytime the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna. And those ladies' minds and hearts, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. Om Agyanatamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unlitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So we're concluding a chapter of the 10th canto here this morning, the Gopi Sing of Krishna, which is a very delightful chapter. You've all been going through it every morning, and I'm just catching up with all of you today. But it's very special. I mean, it's obviously very special in the entire, of course, the entire Bhagavatam is very special. And, of course, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is like the face of the Lord. So it's that much more charming and special. And particularly these chapters, it's said that the five chapters of the Rasalila are like the smile, the beautiful smile of the Lord. And this chapter is very similar to that. It's we're hearing the pastimes of Lord Krishna. But what's making it even more special is that we're hearing these, or you could say we're seeing the pastimes of Lord Krishna through a particular lens. And that lens is through the hearts of the gopis. This is how the gopis think of Krishna. So in a sense, this chapter of the Bhagavatam is opening up the hearts of the gopis and allowing us to see what's in their heart, or to understand what's in their minds. And, of course, that is the most special consciousness that there is. That's Krishna Prema. So here we have the most condensed, beautiful description where the gopis are thinking of Krishna. And in the beginning of the chapter, it mentioned that this is when the gopis are feeling sad. This is what they think of, or this is what they sing of. They sing of Krishna's pastimes. And then here, the very first verse says that this is an expression of their sadness. But in this verse, we see that actually it's saying that they took pleasure in singing this. And so in the commentaries describing that there is this unique paradox that somehow, although they're feeling separation from Krishna, the gopis are feeling separation from Krishna, and that feeling is a feeling of deep sadness, that somehow that very deep feeling of sadness is not like the sadness that we experience in this world, but it's somehow it's an experience of spiritual bliss. I've heard the analogy given of dry ice. You all know dry ice? They call it dry ice here in India? That there's this element, I don't even know exactly what it is, but it's simultaneously very cold. It will cool things, but if you touch it, then you get burned. Right? So somehow it's possessing both these qualities. And so the gopis, it appears that they're sad, and they are sad, but somehow in that sadness, because that feeling of sadness is intensifying their thought of Krishna, therefore it's bliss. It's a special thing, it's an intimate thing to be able to see inside the heart of a devotee. And here we're seeing inside the hearts of the most exalted devotees. The entire 10th canto is really, we're hearing again and again expressions from Krishna's devotees, expressing, opening up their heart and expressing what's inside. In so many places we'll see this happen. We'll see the wives of the brahmanas, when they get the opportunity, then they'll open up their heart and express, Krishna, this is how we feel about you. And Krishna's friends will express, this is how we feel about you. And in so many ways, the wives of the Kaliya serpent, they also open up their hearts and express, Krishna, this is how we feel about you. And here we have the most exalted of all the devotees, the gopis. And, you know, there are many pastimes with the gopis. And the gopis are always holding these feelings inside, right? Because they can't express them openly due to the circumstances. For the wives of the brahmanas to express their hearts, they could openly express their heart to Krishna. There's no problem with that. For Krishna's friends, they could openly express their heart to Krishna. And for the wives of Kaliya, they could openly, publicly express exactly what they're feeling about Krishna. But the gopis, because they're young ladies, because it would be improper for them externally to express their feelings for Krishna, they had to hold them inside. So when Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, the gopis, they had 7 days and nights they could just stare at Krishna. But their feelings they had to hold inside. And even when Krishna took their clothes, you know, and they're standing for him, they're feeling these feelings, but they had to keep them to themselves. Recently, I was asked to speak on Rasa Purnima. So, of course, this is the night that the Rasa Leela took place. And it's a very exalted subject, and it's not a subject I feel very qualified to speak on. But as I was reading it, I was noticing that it appeared to me that perhaps one thing that made that pastime so special was because for the first time the gopis opened up their hearts and they expressed verbally, through their words, they expressed what was in their heart. And they told Krishna, you know, we've given up everything for you. You are the only, everything else to us is meaningless, right? It's your lotus feet we hold in our heart, and we want to think of nothing else, and we want nothing else, and we don't care about anything else. You may tell us to go back to our homes, but we don't care about that. All we care about is you, and we love you, and we want to be with you. So please allow us to serve you in this way. For the first time, they just completely opened up and expressed what they felt. And here, again, they're singing. You know, different devotees express their hearts in different ways, right? And that's one of the beautiful kind of varieties of Krishna consciousness. Here, actually, in the commentary, it's saying that in Western countries, devotees mix different types of ice cream. And by mixing them, they get all different kind of flavors. And there are many different flavors of devotion to Krishna, and Krishna enjoys the different flavors. And as Krishna's servants in the association of the devotees, we can also appreciate all the different varieties of devotion that devotees express. And it's expressed in different ways. Different devotees will express it in different ways. Sometimes a devotee will express their devotion through the worship of a deity. Right? Like, have any of you seen, for instance, how Indrajumna Swami worships his deities? Has anyone had, like, darshan of his deities? Maybe seen photographs? Anybody? It's very beautiful. You know, it's very clean and very pure. But there's something, especially beautiful about the deities that he has and how they've come to him, how he's found them, how they've come together. And also in how they're worshipped, the details, you know, the paraphernalia that he finds for them. It's all done with a lot of thought and a lot of devotion. And when you have the privilege to witness that Archana Seva that he does, then you feel purified and you feel pleasure. So some devotees express it through deity worship. I know I like to come here to Radha Gopinath Mandir at this time of year for the Pushabhisheka. And I personally, I see it as a manifestation of the heart of Radhanaswami, that this festival. Of course, it's a manifestation of the heart of all the devotees, but particularly I see it as a manifestation of his heart, and I see it, I understand it as like what's in his heart becomes expressed in that festival. What's inside is expressed outside. And the way that I understand it is that it, actually what's in his heart is the pleasure of devotees coming together to glorify the Lord. And in that day, it's done in a very special and beautiful way. That was his own inspiration. So that's a chance to see inside the heart of a devotee. And devotees will express this in so many ways. Some devotees, through their cooking, express their heart for Krishna. And some devotees, through preaching, express what they feel inside their heart for Krishna. Preaching is actually a special way that one can do it. If one actually goes out, you know, say in the street and distributes books, just one example, it's an opportunity to show externally what one is feeling internally. Right? If we don't do that, we may never truly express it with the same intensity, with the same urgency. Right? So, all the different devotional services that we do, there's many varieties, but there's something that's similar in them all, and that's the devotion. That's the Krishna consciousness. Without that, there's actually really no offering to Krishna. It's actually the devotion, the love, the affection, the prema that's accepted, and it's offered externally in different ways. There's a really beautiful verse. I don't know the Sanskrit, but it's in the book called Padyavali, which is a collection of verses. It's Rupa Goswami's collecting verses that are very dear to him. So in a sense, it's like seeing into his heart. And there's a verse there. The verses are categorized in different ways, but there's one small section that said, these are verses for offering bhoga to the Lord. And there's a verse there that says that, dear Lord Krishna, just as you enjoyed the offerings of the wives of the brahmanas, and just as you enjoyed the milk and the yogurt from the cows of Raja, and just as you enjoyed the meal offered by Vidura, and just as you enjoyed the milk from the breast of Mother Yashoda, and just as you enjoyed the meals prepared by the girls of Raja, may you in the same way enjoy this offering that I'm making to you now. Okay. So if you look at all those meals, they're different. You know, some, like we can imagine, the wives of the brahmanas, I imagine they're probably very good cooks. And so they probably, you know, when they had that opportunity to cook for Krishna, they probably used all their skills and all their talents and all their creativity to make the very special varieties of dishes to offer to the Lord. And of course the cows, they can't cook like that. They don't cook like that, but they have their milk. And that milk is a manifestation of their love for Krishna. Same as from Mother Yashoda, right from her own body. It's an offering, it's a manifestation of her love. Now the meal that Vidura offered to Krishna, from what I understand, that was like almost like a mistake, you know, that Krishna had the opportunity to take a meal from Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was able to, because he had the facility, externally he had the facility to offer an amazing feast for Krishna. But Krishna did not accept that invitation. He accepted the invitation of Vidura. And Vidura was feeling such... Vidura's, what was happening internally, externally, Duryodhana's offering, you could say, was superior. But internally, Vidura's offering was superior. So therefore, the offering was superior, because that's what's actually offered. So Vidura was feeling overwhelmed with joy that Krishna was coming to his home. Right? Duryodhana was feeling, here is an opportunity that I can get something from Krishna. And Vidura was saying, here's an opportunity where I can give something to Krishna. And because he was feeling such ecstasy, he was offering some banana, but he offered the peel rather than the actual banana itself. But Krishna appreciated that more than what Duryodhana could have offered. Right? So, whether it be the milk of these cows, or the milk of Mother Yashoda, or the very nicely prepared dishes of the girls of Raja, the gopis, who are expert in cooking, or whether it be the meal that was offered by Vidura, externally it's all very different, but internally, the common ingredient is the expression of love that they have. It's saying here that it says that tat chitaha, that their hearts were absorbed in him, and then it says tat manasaha, that their minds were absorbed in Krishna. So, you know, the mind and the heart, you know, in one sense, what is the heart? It is what one holds most dear in their mind. Of course, for the gopis, you know, it's just as Krishna expresses in the Gita. In the most confidential part of the Gita, Krishna says, manmana bhava mad bhakto, always think of me and become my devotee. And then, of course, Krishna, again, to emphasize that, he repeats it at the end of the 16th chapter, manmana bhava mad bhakto, always think of me. That's what's happening in the mind, in the heart of these gopis, and it's expressed in detail here. It's expressed in fine detail what was happening in their minds. We struggle, most of us struggle, I know I definitely struggle, to keep thoughts of Krishna in my mind. So therefore for aspiring devotees like myself, there's something called sadhana. You know, there's seva and sadhana. And through the seva and the sadhana, one practices. One practices keeping thoughts of Krishna in one's mind. For the gopis, those thoughts came automatically. They didn't have to practice. Those thoughts were there. As a matter of fact, even if they tried to stop thinking of Krishna, sometimes they would try to stop thinking of Krishna, they couldn't stop thinking of Krishna. But for most of us, we have to practice. And again, that practice will take place in different ways. There's certain aspects of our sadhana that are going to be common because our acharyas have laid out how we should practice. And then, of course, for each individual, there may be individual ways that they practice. Right? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu is speaking to Sanatana Goswami and is explaining the process of devotional service. And so he gives 64 items. And those are the 64 items that we'll find in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or the Nectar Devotion. But just prior to giving those 64 items, he quotes a verse, Mahaprabhu quotes a verse from the Padma Purana. What is it? Satatam, Smartavya Satatam Vishnur, Vishvartam No Najatu Chit. What is it? Sarve Vidina Sedasur, Etayor Eva Kinkara. That always think of Krishna, never forget Krishna. And that sarve vidhi, that all the other rules, that they're kinkara, they're the servants of these two. Right? To always think of Krishna and never forget. For the gopis, it was natural. It was spontaneous. For us, we practice it. But in the course of practicing it, the key, the important ingredient, the most important part of it, is that we're thinking of Krishna. We're given details, we're given rules, we're given instructions, whatever that may be. Take, for instance, the worship of the deity. Here again, we see, you know, very nice expression of the hearts of the devotees that are worshiping the Lord here, Radha Gopinath. And there's details of exactly how one should perform that seva. Actually, there's a lot of details, you know, exactly how one should cleanse themselves physically, how one should dress, how one should purify their body, how one should purify their mind. And then at each step, how the offering is made in a particular way. And all those rules are meant, again, they're kinkara, they're servants of of the rules that we always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Right? If we think about it, we'll find that to some degree, all of us are struggling to be Krishna conscious. Some more than others. And we come together in a sangha of Vaishnavas. And that sangha, in a sense, is our protection. In one sense, it's our only protection. That we have other devotees to serve with. And then we take up a variety of services with those devotees. Right? We maintain a temple. We preach. We serve the guru. We do so many things. And in the course of that, we come into conflicts often. We run into struggles. And often those conflicts overwhelm us, let's say. When I say overwhelm, what I mean is that our mind becomes absorbed in that. Our mind becomes absorbed in those struggles. I know that's very much where my mind ends up so much of the time. And we often miss the point. You know, we often miss the point. Every seva, every ritual is meant to bring our mind to Krishna. Right? It's a very interesting thing that, for instance, in the English language, we have the word ritual. I don't know the origin of that word, but in Sanskrit, we say samskara. Right? And so there are different samskaras that are performed. Literally, samskara means an impression in the mind. So there's a great wisdom that when one performs a samskara, built right into the very word is the idea that you're doing something external, but the whole point is that it's going to leave an impression in your mind. All right? Otherwise, the external is not so important. We need to do, externally, we need to follow properly. We need to follow carefully. We need to do things right, conscientious, attention to detail, follow, you know. But the point is, because when we do that with the right intention, with the blessing of the acharya, of the guru, that it will transform our mind, that it will leave an impression in our mind, that it will replace the impressions that are there already. Right? It's built right into the word samskara. It's right there so that you don't forget. In the West, there are also samskaras. But they're not, at least from what I've been exposed to, not so finely designed, you know. But it's there. I think, like, Western people don't even know it, but it's there. But having been trained to some degree in Vaishnavism and in Bhakti Yoga, then you can look back and, like, for instance, take a wedding, for example. Okay, there's a very nice samskara, Vedic style wedding. And then you also have a Western-style wedding. How many of you have ever seen a Western-style wedding? Anybody here? Some Western people? Or maybe you've seen it portrayed in a film or something like that. In the Vedic samskaras, you know, there's often some, let's say, for lack of a better word, some superstition, right? That if you don't do this right, there could be some bad consequences. So make sure you do this right, right? Like in the Western marriage, there's a superstition, very common, prominent one. Does anyone know what it is? For on the wedding day? No. Although generally people wouldn't. But there's the idea that the groom, the man to be married, should on the day of the wedding should not see the bride until the moment of the actual wedding. Is that the same in? It's the same in the Vedic wedding. Similar, yeah. Sometimes. And I thought about that. I thought, why? Why? Not always. But I thought, why is it? You know, why? And they'll say it's bad luck. You know, it's bad luck. But I try to think, you know, why is it? This is what I came up with in any case. It seems to make sense to me. That on the day of the wedding, the young man is separated, the young lady is somewhere else. And what's happening is actually there's a whole team and they're serving the bride, right? They're decorating her with great enthusiasm, right? They're decorating her hair. They purchase this dress, right? Here there's a sari, usually a big heavy red sari. In the West it's like a big white dress. That dress that they'll buy, and it's probably similar here, it will be the most expensive outfit that lady will ever wear in her entire life. Right? They'll spend thousands of dollars. And I imagine they buy very expensive saris here and very expensive jewelry. So they buy this fancy dress. They put her in the dress. They decorate her hair, makeup, and all this. And they're spending hours doing this. Now, the groom is separate. And then when the time of the wedding comes, it's generally in a church or a synagogue of some sort. I was raised as a Catholic, so it's in a church. And generally the church has pews, you know, pews are like benches. And then there's an aisle that goes right down the middle. And that brings you up to the altar where there's no deities. but there is like a place where the samskars are performed, right? I remember, actually, you know, my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Goswami, he used to, he was in the University of Cambridge in England. And he had one servant visit him there, Gopal Raj. I'm sure some of you know him. He's a very good cook. He's in Vrindavan now. And so Gopal Raj was serving him there in England. And one day they went to visit a church, a cathedral. And there's some very impressive cathedrals you can find, especially in Europe, because the governments used to sponsor those cathedrals, and they're really opulent and beautiful. They're huge, big domes and intricate, opulent, you know, decoration, sculpture, painting, everything. Really nice. Really, really impressive. Gopal Raj went with my Guru Maharaj to one of these cathedrals. And my Guru said, what do you think of the cathedral? And he said, it's very nice, but where's Krishna? You know, in other words, where's God? You know, he expected, where's the deity? You know, he didn't see the deity. But in any case, there's this, generally there'll be doors that open up and there'll be a path that goes right down the middle, right up to that altar. So on the wedding day, the groom is up by the altar. And he's there with the priest and with his best friend, usually. They call it the best man. Do they have that here, too? Like the close friends of the groom are there. Generally, there's one in particular called the best man. He's holding the ring. So when the moment comes to give the bride the ring, the best man provides the ring. In any case. But he's waiting there for the bride to arrive. And at a certain point, this music starts, right? Some kind of like celestial organ music. And then the doors open. And at that moment, the groom sees the bride. Right? And she's not alone. She's accompanied by her father. And her father has her by the arm. And so my understanding is that the groom shouldn't see the bride in the entire day, because at that moment, when he sees her, something's supposed to happen in his mind, right? Like, he's thinking, she's very beautiful, and she's very precious, and she's been protected her whole life by this man. And so now it's my responsibility to take care of her. And she is very beautiful, and she is very precious, like that. And if he saw the transformation, like, gradually take place of the beautifying of the bride, it wouldn't have the same, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the effect, right? If it happened gradually, but because it happens at once, there's music, the doors open, boom, you know. So all that effort was put in so that that moment, you know, an impression. Now, in one sense, that impression is an illusion. But in another sense, it's important. It's important that that he feel that dharma, you know, to protect her. You know, so in that sense, there's a purpose behind it. And the purpose of the ritual is ultimately the effect that it leaves in the mind. Right? So we serve together. You know, we preach together. We serve the deities together. We maintain the temple together. There'll be so many struggles. There'll be so many hardships. There will be conflicts. And there'll also be, unfortunately, what comes out is that there are things in our hearts or in our minds that aren't just like the gopis here, right? That'll be wanting something from Krishna rather than wanting solely and exclusively to give to Krishna. You know, we'll want something out of the seva. And when that's there, then there's some kind of conflict. And when that's not there, then there's cooperation and there's unity. Yeah? In one sense, that unity is a type of yoga, right? The word yoga, when we take this word yoga, we understand it means like union. Right? Now, some will interpret that union to mean that the soul or the atma becomes one with the Lord in all respects. And of course, our acharyas have taught us that that's not the proper understanding. But we can understand the union in the word yoga in different ways. And in one sense, we can understand it here. Like we look here and saying that the ladies, their chitta, their consciousness or their heart was absorbed in Krishna. Now, what is the nature of the atma? Right? What is it? Nitya siddha, Krishna prema. Right? So it's that the natural condition of the self is that it loves Krishna. Now the situation of the chitta or the mind is generally something different. It's been impressed by this world in so many ways that it's developed an elaborate network of likes and dislikes, of things that it finds attractive and things that it finds repulsive. The nature of the atma is that it's attracted to Krishna. But our minds are generally attracted in other ways. But if we can train the mind through sadhana, you know, through the practice, through these 64 items, through following properly, with the right attitude, with the blessings of the Vaishnavas, then that mind can be reshaped. It can be re-impressed. Until that mind becomes one with the nature of the self. That the nature of the mind becomes the same as the nature of the self. And there's union. And that's yoga. Right? And if the devotees actually all share that, the more that we share that, then the more that we become united. And that's yoga too. Because actually our process of bhakti yoga is sankirtan. Right? I remember it was back in the early 90s. There was something very special in ISKCON that was happening that I was fortunate to experience with this Navadvip Mandal Prakrama that I think it was about 1990, maybe 1991, that devotees started doing this prakrama out of Mayapur. And they did it at the same exact time as the GBC meetings. And I missed it the first year. I think the first year was only about 90 devotees. And I believe Arshana Maharaj was on it. And I don't remember who else. But the devotees that went on it said that it was such a special experience that more devotees became interested the next year. So I was fortunate. I was on the next year, and I think it was about 200 devotees. And so we went to the nine islands of Navadvip. You would sleep at each one, each night on a different island. And there's very nice kirtan and very nice katha. And I remember many of you know Raghunath. Of course, Radhakund knows Raghunath very well, who often comes here at this time as well. He just actually had a baby just the other day, so he's staying with his wife this year. But he and I were together on that prakrama, and we would camp out at a different place. They would make these tents, kind of burlap tents, but we would kind of just go off on our own and find some place under the stars. And it was almost like seeing Navadvip. Up until that point, at least for myself, we go to Mayapur and mostly stay there, you know, on the ISKCON property. Sometimes take a little trip out, but to live out there for 9 days straight and to just see the beauty of the Dham, to breathe the air of the Dham with the devotees, it was beautiful and really moving. And it was so nice that the following year, the GBC caught on, so they changed it and they made it so that they had the GBC meetings and then they'd have that Parikrama. And so the next year, I think it was maybe like 1,200 devotees came because the entire GBC came, and it was really encouraged that everyone came, and it really became a very powerful event. But I remember I was fortunate to be able to serve my guru on that entire yatra. And, you know, of course, it begins at the Yogapith at the birthplace of Mahaprabhu. And then you go on for your 9 days, and then you end up there again. And then when we ended up there again, different devotees spoke. And I always remember I was sitting right next to my Guru Maharaj, and Ravinda Swarup Prabhu was speaking. And he said that the most important thing that he got out of that parikrama was the realization that he said that our practice is sankirtan. And that means that we practice bhakti together and that we all go back to Godhead together. And when he said that, then my Guru Maharaj, just on his own, but I was sitting there, he said, that's the point. Right there, that's the point. That's the point that we need to realize. That this is actually how we practice. There are different types of yogis, and they do different types of practice. Some go off alone, right? But our practice, particularly the followers of Mahaprabhu, our practice is that together we practice. And the advancement of the bhaktas that we associate with is as important to us as our own advancement. It's not that we're trying to escape this world and get to Krishna, but what we're trying to do is, as a group, we're trying to return to our Krishna consciousness, just like the gopis here. As a group, they're always completely absorbed in thinking of Krishna. It's nice. I mentioned earlier that different devotees express their consciousness or their devotion in different ways. And the gopis, of course, they express it in many ways. But maybe the most prominent way is through singing. Right here, I believe the word is used there somewhere. Lila gayatihi. Right, that they're singing Krishna's leelas. And even when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, he had it up there for 7 days and seven nights, and the rain is coming down. And eventually Lord Indra realizes, I'm defeated. And so then he calls back the clouds, and then the sky is clear, the sun comes out. And Krishna says, it's safe now, you can go ahead and go out. And first the men venture out, and then they take the cows and the ladies all come out. And then Krishna places Govardhan Hill right back in the exact spot where Govardhan was previously. And then it says that everyone goes back to what they were doing. And it says that in the last verse of the description of the lifting of Govardhan Hill says, and then the gopis together return to their homes, all the while seeing the glories of Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill and his other pastimes, having their hearts having been touched by Krishna. Right? So naturally, they sing about Krishna. Krishna just lifted the hill and then he put it down, and immediately they were singing songs about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill, because that's how they express their heart. And this chapter, the gopis sing of Krishna, that's their expression of their internal consciousness, that together they sing about the beauty of Krishna. And so we're fortunate to be able to have that insight, to be given the privilege to see into the hearts of the gopis. And we can take it as an inspiration to try to appreciate their love and to try to serve like them together, manmana bhava madbhakto, to always remember Krishna and never forget, and live that way. Try to leave behind any other consciousness that interferes with that. Try not to miss the point that externally we're doing a practice, but internally we're missing the internal transformation that's meant to happen, and that together we help one another to remember Krishna. So I'll stop here, and thank you all so much for being here. And if there, I think we have a few minutes if anyone has comments or questions. Prajbihari Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. You know, consistently though, throughout the class, we are speaking about this theme about you know, whether we are preaching or doing deity worship, cooking for Krishna. It's all an external expression of our love for Krishna. So the devotion is the essential ingredient. And then you are quoting that verse from Padma Purana also, Smartavya Satatam Vishnu. I was thinking that, you know, this devotion and this this affection for Krishna, after some years we realize that it's not some kind of, you know, intellectual adjustment. It's not that, okay, now I'm going to love Krishna, I'm going to remember Krishna now. It just doesn't happen. So I was wondering how we can fill our devotional external activity. Like we said, we should not miss the point. So how do we fill our external, the externals of our bhakti with affection for Krishna? How can we develop affection and feelings? Especially, you know, while chanting also.
Yeah.
You know, we may have many techniques and we may have many things, but essentially that affection and that love, how can we develop for Krishna? And how can we know that we are developing?
Yeah, I think your point is very important and significant. That in other words, it's not like we do something and then affection develops. This is how you get affection for Krishna. You do A, B, C, D, and then you feel this love. But my understanding is that the love is there. Sometimes Prabhupada would use an example of a magnet, right? That if a magnet is rusty, that it loses its ability to attract. And so if there are iron filings, that it really won't have any strength. But if you sand that down, you remove what's external to it, that rust, then it'll immediately attract again. So we have that attraction, we have that affection, we have that love. And the process is meant to uncover it. So we pray for it to be uncovered. You know, we follow carefully and we pray for the blessing of the Vaishnavas, the blessings of Krishna, the blessings of Srimati Radharani, the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. That what's there, that now I'm chanting, I don't have that affection. I don't feel those. And so, of course, like Narottam Das Thakur, that's what he's singing, right? That when will that day come? That when I chant the holy name, that I'll feel the feelings that I'm supposed to feel. That my hair will stand on end, and that my voice will become choked up and tears will be coming out of my... That is beneath this citta, right? Beneath this citta, beneath the mind, with all its lifetimes of impressions. That affection's there. And to the extent that we're able to shape that mind, to the extent that we're blessed that mind becomes shaped, so that it becomes the same nature of the self, then that attraction comes through. But all of our desires that are separate from Krishna are like that rust on the magnet, you know. It has to be removed. So we can't even do it. There's no process that we do by which it. We follow the process, and we pray for the mercy. And when we receive some mercy, then we feel some. That affection that's there, then we feel it again. That's what we aspire for. That's what we live for. That might become uncovered again. It's there, but by following carefully and by praying for the blessings, hopefully becomes uncovered. And if we can be near a devotee that it's become uncovered, then we begin to feel it a little bit too by their mercy. You know, because it's manifested in them, that attraction. Sometimes there's a devotee that has attraction for kirtan, a devotee that has attraction for shravana. And it's by their attraction that we become attracted. Actually, that's just the way it works. You know, there'll be a special devotee. In our case, of course, it's Srila Prabhupada, that by his devotion, he awakened devotion in so many hearts. And then we're fortunate that he left behind followers that have also uncovered it to some degree. And by being near them, we can feel it. By their grace, you know, by their grace, we feel it. So it's there, but it just has to be uncovered. Yeah. I hope that helps. Anyone else? Question? Comment? Okay. Thank you all so much. Gautaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.